Greetings again.
This is again Mordecai Joseph to all of God's people. We are today in lesson 182. And in the last lesson, we ended with chapter 30 and verse 2 and 3, where Rachel, in essence, is bemoaning her fate, not having children, and being envious at her sister, going about the wrong way in every way instead of pleading with God and demanding that she has a child or else. And obviously, she incurred the wrath of Jacob, and she was not pleasing in that attitude in the sight of God either. And so instead of dealing with the matter by going directly to God, she opted for the second choice that she had, you know, the opportunity that all women had in those days, and that was according to the custom of the law, that if she cannot bear children, in order to redeem her honor, she would give her maid to her husband as a wife, and whatever came out of that maid, the firstborn always, by law, belonged to the first wife, and that's how she, in essence, redeemed herself and redeemed her honor. Of course, today we cannot understand those kind of things, and we're so far removed from it, but then, in their days, they could not understand our attitude today either, being, on their part, also very removed from this world in which we are. And so, you know, we have to understand it always from the context of what the situation is and the time and the circumstances and not from our point of view. That's the way that generally go wrong. And too many people study the Bible, their point of view and their century and their time and their customs and their background. And that's the wrong way to study the Bible. That's the reason why many people misunderstand it and inject their own attitudes and their own customs and their own habits and their own beliefs or faith or feelings or whatever it may be. And every generation they come up with new religions. And so Rachel says, okay, well, I cannot have a child, so you go to my maid, just like Sarah did. Well, and I cannot have a child, even though God promised her to have a child. And so she says, you take my maid, she'll become your wife. And whatever comes out of her, I'm going to be built by her. And that's how they build a house, through children. And so that's what she's saying here in verse 3. And she said, behold, my maid Bilhah, go in unto her, that she may bear upon my knees, and I also may be builded up through her. And that's how women in those days redeemed themselves and redeemed their honor and their value in the sight of the community, in the sight of their husbands. And so in verse 4 we read, and she gave him Bilhah, her handmaid, to wife. You see, if she did not do it, he could not have taken her. You see, and that was a part of the custom. It was up to the wife to do it. So the man didn't need to go around and mess around, whatever it may be. The wife, in essence, had the privilege and the right, according to the laws of the society, to do that. And so she's the one that gave him Bilhah, her handmaid, to wife, and Jacob went in unto her, and Bilhah conceived and bore Jacob a son. Why did she conceive and bore Jacob a son? How come Rachel couldn't do it? Again, God is involved here. You see, this is the future family of God, the heritage of God, the people of God, the bride. So we have to always look at it as we study this kind of things from God's point of view. What is he up to? And as the story continues, we find out. And so she conceived a son and bore Jacob the son, and mind you, it's not a daughter, it's a son, and in every single case, the first 12, they were children, they were boys, you see, and at least most of the first ones, you know, were sons, and then Dinah, or Dinah in Hebrew, came later. So to this whole family and these four wives of Jacob, God gave sons, and only one daughter, you see, he planned it. Generally, it doesn't happen that way. You know, they're always boys and girls. And so she conceived and bore a son, and Rachel said, now, listen, who is speaking here? Bilhah is not saying it. Rachel says, God has judged me and has also heard my voice and has given me a son. So she's saying, in essence, that she pleaded with God. If I cannot have it, you know, give me a son through this woman. Of course, obviously, you know, God intended for her to have children, but her attitude withheld from her this direct blessing at this point, but he gave it to her later. And so as she pleads with God and cries to God, you know, he listens to her, and then she turns around and begins to think a little bit more positively about these things and does things the right way. So God is blessing her, hearing her voice. She knows that, and this is the outcome of that. Dan is born. Now, Dan means a judge. And so that's what she's saying. God has judged me. In essence, she's saying, he judged me. In other words, he judged me worthy of having a son. If not directly through me, at least through my handmaid. And so she said, he gave me a son. And therefore, she called his name Dan. But again, that's by inspiration. God is the one directing those things, because remember, he who sees things, you know, the end from the beginning, looking to the future, the heavenly city of Jerusalem, those things are not a coincidence that happen along the way. When they are very important to God, he makes sure that they come about. You know, when there are minor details that are neither here nor there, where he allows chance and time and circumstances to happen. It's not that he's in control in every detail, on every detail in life. But the things that really matter to him, and here you're talking about the gates of the heavenly city of Jerusalem, obviously he directs things to happen just that way. And so Bilhah, Rachel's handmaid, conceived again and bore Jacob a son. And Rachel said, with mighty wrestlings have I wrestled with my sister. Now, her sister was not to blame, but she had an attitude, and that's the attitude she's talking about. And so she said, that's what I've done, and I have prevailed. And also, you can imagine the animosity that developed there, the tension between the two sisters, the envy, back and forth. You know, Leah was not an angel either. And you can imagine how they felt about each other. And so she's describing that. And yet, ultimately speaking, God is working out his plan through man, in spite of man. And so this is what you see also here. And so he gives her another son through her handmaid. And she called his name. You know, she's the one giving the name, because she's the one, according to the law, who is in charge. She's the wife. And she called his name Naphtali. And God, again, is inspiring her to give that name. And Naphtali means to wrestle. And when Leah saw that she had left off bearing, well, she said, well, I can't do it anymore. God is not giving me any more sons. So, well, I'll do it just like my sister did. And that's, again, according to the law. And when Leah saw that she had left off bearing, she took Zilpah, her handmaid, and gave her to Jacob to wife. Again, you know, notice always that. The preeminence of the wife, and that's why the others were not called wives, even though they were wives, but they were not called wives. They were called concubines, or pilegesh in Hebrew. And, in other words, a second rate wife, but still, nevertheless, a wife, but not having the same rights. Today, you know, we have a difficulty understanding it, because we've departed from that, and yet you still have hierarchy. In the workplace, you have it in many places, you have it in churches, and you have it in many other societies, you know, like the caste system. So, in one form or the other, you know, the same manner is still, the same attitude and the same differences are still there. And so she's the one calling the shots. And so she takes Zilpah, her handmaid, and she gave her to Jacob to wife, and Zilpah, Leah's handmaid, bore Jacob, again, a son. And it's not a daughter, but a son. You see, God is again working out his plan in this family, in spite of them. And so Leah said, verse 11, fortune is come. And she called his name God. Now, God in Hebrew means fortune, and it means also, from that comes the word gdud, which means many. You know, use it generally for army purposes, you know, the battalion, gdud in Hebrew, that means many soldiers. And so she had already four, now comes another one, so she says many, and many and fortune are associated, because, you know, when you get a fortune, what does that mean? You know, he didn't get $1, you know, in the lottery, he got many, you see, or many coins, or many pieces of silver and gold, you know, or many children, you see, or many lands, that's called a fortune. And so that's the reason why this two, fortune and many, is linked in Hebrew. It's a very descriptive language. And so Zilpah, Leah's handmaid, bore Jacob a second son, and Leah said, "Happy am I, for the daughters will call me happy." And she called his name Asher. Asher means blessed or happy. You see that word constantly in the Psalms. Blessed and happy is the man. Ashre Haish. You see, blessed is the man. And so that's what she said. I'm happy. Well, obviously, she's happy. She's got more sons. And Reuben went in the days of wheat harvest, that is her firstborn, and found mandrakes in the field. Mandrakes were little apples, little fruits that looked like apples, and they supposedly had aphrodisiac elements in them to cause someone to fall in love, all these stories. Whether it is true or not, we don't know. Maybe scientists can discover those kind of things. But there are things, that trigger desire and things like that, and so especially people being superstitious sometimes, they attribute too much to something, but on the other hand, the placebo effect sometimes can have the same result. And so this is what he found, and he brought them unto his mother Leah, knowing what they mean, knowing her situation, all those things, knowing the fact that she's not loved by his father. You can see an awful lot of things there in the background. And so this is what he did. And so Rachel said to Leah, she saw it, "Give me, I pray you, of your son's mandrakes." And obviously, you can imagine the reason for it. And Leah says to her, "Is it a small matter that you have taken away my husband?" Which is not true. She didn't take away her husband, you see. Jacob wanted to marry Rachel, not Leah, but that's the way Leah saw it, because she was the first wife. And that was by deceitful act on the part of her father. Jacob never saw it that way, obviously, even though she was his first wife, but, she was forced upon him. It wasn't his choice. And that's the reason why he didn't even love her to begin with. And so she fell that way. But that's the attitude she developed. Rachel is not to blame. Just like Esau. It's an attitude of Esau. Esau sold his birthright to Jacob, and then he complains to his father Isaac when Jacob swindled it from him by a deceitful manner at the end of his father's life when he blessed him, thinking that he was Esau. This is what Esau said. "Well, he took it from me." You see? Well, that's not what happened. It was his to begin with. And so, some attitude, sometimes we use human nature instead of righteousness to explain things the way they are. And so he says, "Is it a small matter that you have taken away my husband, and would you take away my son's mandrakes also?" And what a comparison between the husband and the mandrakes. And Rachel said, "Therefore he shall lie with you tonight for your son's mandrakes." So they're bargaining here, who's going to go to bed with me and have children? That's the purpose of it. And you can see in the Bible an attitude and a morality and an openness that certainly is not found and has not been found, for the past many centuries in the religion calling itself Christianity. And yet you go to the Middle East and they still speak openly like that about these matters. It's not something to be bashful about, or to be ashamed about, to be a hush or taboo or hush-hush or something in the dark or in privacy. Those things were spoken in the open. A much healthier an attitude toward these matters, which in essence creates a healthy atmosphere and results. Well, in contrast, when people take things that God gave us that are wholesome and clean and make them impure, then our minds become impure and everything becomes impure, and therefore the results are much worse. And so this is the argument here and the debate and the way they settle the matter. You give me the mandrakes and you can go to Jacob tonight. And so Jacob came from the field in the evening, and Leah went out to meet him and said, "You must come in unto me, for I have surely hired you with my son's mandrakes." You read that again, you see the totally open atmosphere about this matter of reproduction and sex and love affair and all these things. You don't see any of those attitudes that develop later on in Joseph, in the children of Israel, and even to a degree in the children of Judah. even though they remained even closer, in one sense, to the attitudes of the past. They too, because of the influence of being in the midst of the children of Israel and other nations, developed the same wrong attitudes towards sexuality, to a degree at least. And yet you see, the Bible makes it very plain how people are and how people were and how people should be, in contrast to how they became. And so we read Jacob, you know, is not arguing very much, and he lay with her that night. And God hearkened unto Leah, and she conceived, and bore Jacob a fifth son. And Leah said, God has given me my hire, because I gave my husband, my handmaid, to my husband. And so here she has a son directly, and she is attributing that to the fact that she added to the fortune of her husband by giving him more children, even not only through her, but through her handmaid. And so she's seeing it as a direct result of that and a reward from God. And she called his name Issachar, which means my reward. The word from Issachar, and from that comes also the word Sachar, which means wages, or payment, you know, that you get for working. And so this name has many meanings. And so Leah conceived again and bore a sixth son, not Jacob. He's pretty busy, obviously, and yet God is the one that is behind this. You have to think about it always from God's point of view, then you begin to perceive it properly for what it is. Think about the future, think about the eternity, think about the plan, think about all the promises that he gave to Abraham and then to Isaac. And then all these things can be understood from that point of view. And so she conceives a son again because God wants her to have a son, and he already knows the name of that son, as he inspires her to give him a name, as in every case. And Leah said, God has endowed me with a good dowry. Now will my husband dwell with me. She's still trying very hard, you know, to capture the love of her husband. Because I have borne him six sons. And she called his name Zvulun. And again, that's related to the dowry and the dwelling. Now, Zvulun, from that comes also dwelling place. And so she's linking the fact that now that she gave him a son and his name is Zvulun, you know, that will sort of a hint to Jacob, you know, she spent more time with me, dwell with me. And apparently Jacob wanted to spend more time with Rachel, and so that was one way for her to get him to spend more time with her. And obviously, these are the human things that we do in life, and all of us are constantly busy at it, and yet throughout it all, God is working out his plan. And we are oftentimes oblivious to it, because we're not in tune with God as we should be. And so afterwards, she bore a daughter and called her name Dinah. Dinah, just like Dan, judge, and that's a feminine form of it, in essence. And God remembered Rachel, and God hearkened to her. So here goes seven children that Leah has, six sons, one daughter, and two more sons from her handmaid. That's nine. And only at this point, even though earlier God already gave Rachel two from her handmaid, it's only at this point, after, in essence, 11 children are born, that now he's giving Rachel the chance to have the children. And oftentimes, you know, our reward comes based on our attitude. You know, the closer we are to God, the more we are humble and obedient to him, the closer our reward will come our way. And God withholds it even longer when our attitude is not what it should be. And so God had Rachel also in mind from the beginning, and he was going to have children from her, and he knew it all along from the beginning, and he knew the timing. And so he remembered Rachel. It's not that he forgot all about her. You see, this is a biblical terminology, that when the time came, that was the time for God to dispense his grace. And so God listened to her, because she was praying, obviously, and opened her womb. And also, obviously, her attitude was changing. And so he opened her womb, and she conceived, and she bore a son, and said, God has taken away my reproach. Now, really, she could be redeemed, and her honor is redeemed when she herself has a son. Until that point, even though she has a son from her handmaid, her respect was not there, her dignity was not there, her reputation was not there as it should have been. Now she has her own son. And so this, what she's saying is, and these are not vain words, God is in the process and putting those thoughts in her mind and in the mind of Leah, and they're all understanding that. God has taken away my reproach, and she called his name Joseph, or Yosef. And Yosef means will add, you know, to add. So he added to her a blessing after he gave her already two sons from her handmaid, and so that's what she called him, Yosef, saying, the Lord add to me another son. She already has two, now she has her own son, and she also is inspired to say that God is going to give her another one. So you see the spirit of prophecy there, and you see the way God is working out his plan. And it came to pass when Rachel had born Joseph that Jacob said unto Laban, at that point he has 12 children, including Dinah, or Dinah, 11 sons, one daughter, all born in the Aramean territory there where Laban was, in Nahor, in northern northwest Babylon. And their father Jacob was born in the land of Israel, but all of them, all of his children, including Joseph, were born in the old country. And unfortunately, as the story goes, you know, you find out that not only they came out of that country, but also they brought attitudes and customs and even pagan customs and idols from that land that they had to deal with for quite a long time. And took quite a while before God could take it out of them, even physically. And so the story has been always from the beginning, where God would say to his people, come out of Babylon. Even though you came from there physically, you should come out of it spiritually. And so Joseph is born now, and then Jacob says, okay, but this time he's been about 20 years already with him. So he came there in his 70s, now in his 90s, and he says to Laban, give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you. Why is he saying, give me my wives? Aren't they his wives already? Well, according to the custom at the time, and still is in some societies to this very day. But mostly at the time, that was the way it was. As long as the father is alive, legally he is the possessor and owner of everything. His children and all their property. Nothing belongs to them until he's dead. And so he has to ask him. And just like later on, you know, you read in the story about the two sons, the prodigal son, where he told his father, give me my inheritance. And he gave him his inheritance, and he blew it up, you know, with all kind of evil practices. And so that's what you see here. Even though a man is old and he's married and he's on his own, so to speak, in many ways, in those days, everything still belonged to the father. That's a patriarchal system. And so it says, give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you, and let me go, for you know my service wherewith I have served you. And Laban said unto him, if now I have found favor in your eyes, I have observed the signs, and the Lord has blessed me for your sake. So he too recognizes that God is with him, with Jacob. And after all, before Jacob came, you know, Laban apparently had only two daughters. He may have had sons, but there is no mention of them. But the fact that his daughters had to go, like Rachel had to go and take the sheep to the well and water them, shows you that he had no sons. Otherwise, the sons would have been the ones to do it. And so, obviously, not having sons in those days, that means that you didn't have many riches, because you need sons to have riches, you know, take care of your flock and work the ground and things like that. And so as soon as Jacob came, now he had a man in the house, like his son, and therefore he began to get also more wealthy. And he recognized that, and he recognized the fact that God was the one that was with him. And so this is what he's saying here. I have observed the signs, and the Lord has blessed me for your sake. And he said, appoint me your wages, and I will give it to you. And he said unto him, Jacob, that is, you know how I have served you and how your cattle have fared with me. You know my reputation. I was above board. I was decent. I was honest, not deceitful. You see, Jacob's learning lessons, and Laban is not yet. And so he says, you know me. I have a track record. For it was little which you had before I came, and it had increased abundantly, and the Lord has blessed you wherever you turned. Or actually, the Lord has blessed you wherever or whithersoever I turned. In other words, he in essence was blessing all the works of my hands, and you were the recipient of that through me. And now this became a pattern actually in the future, and that's the way God said it from the beginning. He told Abraham, those who bless you shall be blessed, and those who curse you shall be cursed. So wherever the children of Israel were, from that time, from the days of Abraham, into the future, to this very day, and into the coming future, God is blessing the peoples around them for the sake of his people Israel. And if those people around them, you know, the Gentiles, other nations, other peoples, live at peace with the children of Israel, God blesses them even more abundantly. And if they don't, God brings curses on them. And so what you read here was a pattern. And that's the way God was going to work it out. And it's also a lesson for all those who are non-Israelites to read this kind of things. And the humble among them learned that and gave God thanks. And those who were not, you know, were proud and were punished for it. That if you want to get blessings from God, you should also be nice to his children. And so, this is what he's saying here. And now, when shall I provide for my own house? Jacob is saying, okay, now you've got all those things. And since, you know, you are the patriarch, and according to the law, everything that I produced belongs to you. You see, as long as you're alive. But what am I going to do with my own house? You know, if I'm going to go away and all everything belongs to you, I need something too. And so he said, what shall I give you? And Jacob said, you shall not give me anything. If you will do this thing for me, I will again feed your flock and keep it. You can imagine Laban is pretty happy about it. And wondering, you know, what kind of a man is that? And of course, he may not have thought about the missing equation here, and that is God. And Jacob knew it, and obviously Jacob was inspired, and later on we shall see that Jacob had contact with God and spoke to God, and God already told him he's going to bring, you know, give him abundance, as he already told him earlier, that he's going to give him abundance of blessings, and he's going to be with him and cause him to return to his homeland. And so Jacob is a man of faith, learned many lessons. 20 years with a deceitful man taught him an awful lot, and you can imagine how much of his own nature he was shedding. Off, that is of the nature of deceitfulness, that was also to a degree in him. He learned many lessons the hard way, and Jacob is now another man. And so he has full faith in God, and he knows that. And so he can tell him, you don't need to give me anything. God is going to give me that. And so that's what he says, I will pass through all your flock today, removing from there every speckled and spotted one and every dark one among the sheep, and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and of such shall be my hire. Now, he would not have said that unless he knew, and unless he had contact with God, and unless God told him that that's the way to do it, and that he's going to bless him. In other words, these are not just words that came out of the mouth of Jacob, you know, for no reason whatsoever. Everything is planned here, and God is behind it, and Jacob is fully aware of it. And so he says, verse 33, so shall my righteousness witness against me hereafter, when you shall come to look over my hire that is before you. Everyone that is not speckled and spotted among the goats and dark among the sheep, that if found with me, shall be counted stolen. In other words, I'm not going to touch anything that is yours. God is going to, through those circumstances here that seem to be so unlikely, produce the results, and you will know that I am a righteous man. I haven't stolen anything from you. And so Laban said, behold, would it might be according to your word. In other words, okay, let's do it the way you say it. Sounds like a good deal to Laban. He's not losing anything. He's continuing to gain here. And so he removed that day the he-goats that were speckled and spotted. And they were the majority. and all the she-goats that were speckled and spotted, every one that had white in it, and all the dark ones among the sheep, and gave them unto the hand of his son. So he's separating all those that are the potential producers away from Jacob and gives it to his sons. So apparently maybe after Rachel and Leah, he had more boys and girls, you know, that were young, and now they're grown up, and so now they can handle his property. And so he said, 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob. And Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flocks, which didn't seem to be like the strong and the healthy and the ones that you would think, you know, would bear you the good, you know, results that you want. And yet, according to the principle that many of the servants of God have recognized, and the Apostle Paul is talking about when he says that when I am weak, God is strong. It is through our weakness and our shortcomings and the situation in which we are that seems to be disadvantaged that God is working out his plan. As I said, it's not by power, it's not by might, but by his Holy Spirit. And Jacob knew it very well. And so he was not afraid of that. He knew that God will be with him. And so this is what is happening here. And so we read in verse 37, and Jacob took him rods of fresh poplar and of the almond and of the plane tree and peeled white streaks in them, making the white appear which was in the rods. Now that would seem very strange, you know, thing to do, and it is, unless you realize that this is exactly the instruction that God gave him. And therefore Jacob was at peace, and he knew that all things will be taken care of. In verse 38 we read, and he set the rods which he had peeled over against the flocks in the gutters in the watering troughs where the flocks came to drink. And they conceived when they came to drink. And the flocks conceived at the sight of the rods. And the flocks brought forth streaked, speckled, and spotted. Now those things don't happen by themselves. You see, God is the one involved in that directly. And Jacob separated the lambs. He also set the faces of the flocks toward the streaked and all the dark in the flock of Laban, and put his own droves apart, and put them not unto Laban's flocks. And it came to pass, whensoever the stronger of the flock did conceive, that Jacob laid the rods before the eyes of the flock in the gutters, that they might conceive among the rods. But when the flock were feeble, he put them not in. So the feebler were Laban's, and the stronger Jacob's. And the men increased exceedingly, and had large flocks, and maidservants, and men servants, and camels, and asses. You see? So out of the impossible, things that may seem to be very strange, but when we have faith in God, and that's what we are told, you know, without faith, we cannot please God. God is not limited by anything, by any circumstances. And oftentimes, many of the things that you read among in the prophets, certain things that God told his prophets to do, you know, would seem to be to any intelligent, normal human being is just silly. And people have no appreciation for that. And they don't understand the mind of God. I think from a human point of view, they'll lean to their own understanding. But when we walk with God, you know, that which seems to be foolish to men is wisdom. Because God is behind it, and we have faith in him, and he can do everything, and so we should never consider anything to be silly or foolish. Because the key is not the things that we do, but the faith. If we have faith, you know, then God will deliver. Just like Jesus Christ himself gave examples, you know. Somebody wanted to be healed, he was blind, and well, Christ, instead of saying, well, be healed, you know, have eyesight. I mean, he had the power to do it. No, you know, he bent down on the ground, he took some clay, he spit on it. You know, what human being, you know, would think about this kind of a solution for healing of the eyes, you know. You don't think that way, we don't think that way, you know, that seems to be silly. And so that's what he did, you know, he spit on the clay and mixed it together and they put it in the eyes of the man. And then he asked him to look around and see, and he said, well, I see things, but, you know, it looks like hazy and not that clear. So he did it again.
You see, from a human point of view, that seems to be silly. But then that's how it is, the preaching of the gospel, as Paul would say now, the preaching of the gospel is foolishness to the world. They don't understand it. But those who walk with God, who know that He can do anything, we should never consider anything silly or unintelligent. And so God blessed him abundantly. He blessed Jacob, you know, throughout this process that seems to be, you know, a very silly process. Not silly to God. And so in chapter 31, we continue the story in verse 1, and he heard the words of Laban's son, saying, Jacob has taken away all that was our father's. See, just like the attitude of Esau, or the attitude of every envious person. See, when people envy, you know, as Sarah herself said, well, you took away my husband. That's the way we think. We don't see our part in it. We don't see the fact that if we serve God, we walk with God, we'll have abundance of blessings. But people always tend to blame others for their own misfortune that they brought upon themselves. That's human nature. And so this is what they are saying, and he hears it. And so they say, you know, he took away from our father. They don't recognize the fact, which even Laban did earlier, that God is the one that gave it to Jacob. And so this is what they're saying here. And of what which was our father's has he gotten all this wealth? See, so we are responsible for his wealth. You know, they don't say God is. Verse 2, and Jacob beheld the countenance of Laban, and behold, it was not toward him as before time. Well, he too had a bad attitude there. Not having relationship with God as he should, even though he recognizes that God is the one doing it, his blessing, he's not willing to acknowledge that. Now, that's human nature. And we'll always have these kind of people around us. And so we have to rely on, you know, by faith on God that he will deliver us from, you know, unreasonable people like that. And we have to be patient sometimes, have to wait. He doesn't do it immediately. And the Lord said unto Jacob, you see, God is involved in all that, return unto the land of your fathers and to your kindred, and I will be with you. And Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field unto his flock. Obviously, he was afraid to speak to them, you know, in presence of their father and others. And so he said to them, I see your father's countenance, that it is not toward me as before time. You know, he's now envious, he's jealous, and people... when they have this kind of attitudes, they just don't think straight anymore, even though they may know better. But the God of my father, he said, has been with me all this time. You see, that's the reason why I was doing all these things that seem to be silly. And so he said, God was with me all this time. And you know that with all my power I have served your father. So I was above board. I was not dishonest. I was not like your dad. I was not like I used to be. And your father has mocked me and change my wages 10 times. Now 10 times, that's an idiom. In other words, many times. He constantly deceived me. But God suffered him not to hurt me. If he said thus, the speckled shall be your wages, then all the flock bore speckled. And if he said thus, the streaked shall be your wages. In other words, he constantly changed his mind. Whenever he saw that Jacob was being blessed, he changed his mind about the way it should be done. But obviously nothing worked. Or, you know, to his benefit. And so he says, then bore all the flock strict, just the opposite of what he said. Thus God has taken away, you see, God is the one doing it, not me. God has taken away the cattle of your father and given them to me. You know, where according to the law, everything that is born, everything that is gained in the household of the patriarch belongs to him. But God is the one that was causing it and bring it about, and he's the one that was bringing all these results. And so instead of giving it to the one that by law, generally speaking, it should be, he takes it away from him and he gives it to Jacob. Because to begin with, he was the intended beneficiary of that, not Laban. So God has taken, he says, away the cattle of your father and given them to me. And it came to pass at the time that the flock conceived that I lifted up my eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the he-goats which leaped upon the flock were streaked, speckled, and grizzled, you know. So God is the one putting that in his mind, obviously.
And so he's saying, and the angel of God, the angel of Elohim, said unto me in a dream, Jacob. And I said, here I am. Now he's speaking here to him, the angel of God. And that's important to notice here, as we already discussed that several times before that. And so he said, that is the angel of God, lift up your eyes and see all the he-goats which sleep upon the flock are streaked, speckled, and grizzled, for I have seen all that Laban does unto you. Now verse 13, this is what the angel of God says. I am the God of Bethel. I see that presents a major problem for those who do not believe that there is one that became later on known as the Father and the one that became later on known as the Son. But all along, you know, two divine beings and one journalist, you know, dealing with people, and the other one is the one over all. And so obviously the rabbis look at this and many other places and they scratch their head. Well, how can you know, he be the angel of God and then he's God? And so some came to the conclusion, well, I guess sometimes God is called an angel. But you see, that creates a problem for them. They don't know how to solve it, so, you know, just shove it aside and forget all about it. And yet, men of truth, and unfortunately some of us have lost it, those in our midst that have lost this plain understanding, and the thing that they speak about this, the two-God theory, and on the market. And so even some nowadays believe that Jesus Christ was just an angel. Of course he's an angel. Angel means a messenger. Angel doesn't mean like Gabriel on the others. And so that's a generic name, angel, messenger. But he makes it very plain. He's God. He's Elohim. He's also Jehovah. He's the Rock. He's the Redeemer. You know, he's a divine being. He's a deity. And so he says, I am the God of Bethel. And people don't believe that. Where you did anoint a pillar, where you did vow a vow unto me, and there is introduced as Jehovah. Now arise, get thee out from this land, and return unto the land of your nativity. And Rachel and Leah answered and said unto him, is there yet any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? You know, they recognize also the deceitfulness of their father and the righteousness of their husband. Are we not accounted by him strangers? So even they are falling of favor, you know, with their own father and their own brothers. For he has sold us, as in this is what he did, in a deceitful manner, and has also quite devoured our price. You see, that was their dowry. For all the riches which God has taken away from our father, that is ours and our children's. Now then, whatsoever God has said unto you, do. Then Jacob rose and set his sons and his wives upon the camels, and he carried away all his cattle and all his substance which he had gathered. Now it's his, you see. It is his by divine law. It wasn't his by human law. And sometimes, you know, there is a conflict between the two. And so, according to this conflict, human beings will look upon it as, you know, he's stealing it and it's not his. And God says, no, that's not stealing. What I give you, it's not stealing. And so he carried all his cattle and all his substance which he had gathered, the cattle of his getting, which he had gathered in Padan Aram, to go to Isaac his father and to the land of Canaan. Now Laban was gone to shear his sheep, and Rachel stole the teraphim, that was a no-no, that were her father's. And so that's unfortunately what happened oftentimes with the family of Israel. They on one hand worship the God of Israel, on the other hand, you know, on the side, they do their idol worship. And that always became obviously a snare to them and brought destruction on them. And in essence, for doing that, and let alone the curse that Jacob pronounced on anybody who stole the idols, that executed, you know, a penalty on Rachel. She should have known better. If God is the one delivering, and God is the one helping, and God is the one giving them all the riches, she doesn't need all these idols. But also she had an ulterior motive. You know, if she takes away the idols of her father, he's not going to be able, you know, that's a superstition, obviously, to ask his idols for help. You see? So that's a part of his superstition. Not that she necessarily worshipped them. And so Rachel stole the teraphim, which were idols that were her father's. And Jacob outwitted Laban. You know, one last outwitting here, which Jacob, you know, had learned not to do. In other words, not to be deceitful. But, you know, sometimes, as Christ would say, sometimes, you know, you have to be shrewd as a serpent and harmless as a dove. There are times when you need to do that. But you shouldn't be by nature as a deceitful person, you know. Be above board. Let your yea be yea and nay be nay. And Jacob outwitted Laban the Aramean in that he told him not that he fled. So he fled with all that he had, and he rose up and passed over the river. In other words, the river Euphrates. So he was in Babylon beyond the river. He was back east, and now he's going west. Well, anyway, we're going to stop at this point. This is again Mordecai Joseph saying greetings to all of God's people. Until next time.